father and I talked about our old families, how they were and all. Hard. Wasn't his daddy, your granddaddy, a preacher?
I didn't know him, but heard stories how he was hard on my dad. Some kind of hellfire and damnation type. Was Chanel dealing?
Salt tried to mask her irritation, laying her words out smooth, not biting them off like she felt.
I didn't say nothing about no dealing. I'll tell you what she cared about, that daughter. So much so, she gave her up.
Did Mary Marie come often?
Every other week or so. I always knew when the girl was coming, 'cause crazy Chanel.
Sister chuckled to herself, shaking her head.
She'd walk over and put on like she was admiring my flowers. I'd see her out my window. But she was no good at sneaking around, all exaggerated, sweeping her arms through the weeds, like on some TV commercial, making faces into the blooms. I'd notice later some kind of pitiful something would be missing. Not the biggest flowers, but things that grow on their own, dandelions or honeysuckle. Then later, I would see Mary Marie leave with the little weeds. It wasn't much she could give her. I don't know why she didn't just ask me. I'd have let her pick the good flowers.
Do you know if anybody saw or heard anything the day Chanel was killed?
Salt rubbed her head in frustration. Johnny C. and Half Dead were in lockup. Q Ball's funeral was Sunday a week ago. Booty Green would stay in federal custody. Still, nobody was coming forward with information. And now, here she was, sunk into an old divan, begging this mysterious woman for some straight answers.
Oh, don't you go thinking anybody gonna testify to any of what somebody might have seen or might have heard.
I'm not asking you to testify. It just needs something to go on.
Sister Connolly looked past Salt's shoulder at the window facing the street in the apartment where Chanel had lived.
A car with New York tags would sometimes be over there. A white man and sometimes a black man would go in Chanel's and come out. They carried suitcases, sacks, or boxes.
Guns? Drugs? Dirty money?
Don't know about any of that either.
And without pause, she asked,
"Why you called Salt?"
Her encounter with Johnny Mitchell on the expressway had been at the entrance closest to Marcy Street.
Mitchell, guns, and a New York tag.
Salt answered distractedly, "Sarah Alt. Our nameplates here." Salt touched the metal above the pocket opposite her badge. "It's just my initial S and Alt. We got the nameplates in the academy. Officer Pepper saw it first. He made a joke about it then, and it stuck."
Sister picked up an old church fan from the side table and began to fan herself. The fan had a picture of Jesus standing in the middle of a flock of sheep, with his hands raised upward, his eyes focused on something otherworldly.
Sister fanned faster, then stood up and unzipped the top part of her robe.
Phew! Rain didn't cool things off much. Excuse me, I don't wear a dress under this robe when it's too hot.
Salt caught a glimpse of Sister's chest. Right above the lace edge of a white slip, her skin was crisscrossed with long scars, like yellow rubber. Sister walked to the window and peered out.
It's still foggy. Old folks used to say another thing about Salt. Salt of the earth meant a good person.
Salt pushed up from the divan, old springs popping, and walked to the door. The fog outside seemed to have doubled. But every week her eyesight had been worsening. She'd been seeing what wasn't there, obscuring what was with floaters and mist. She put a finger to the corner of one eye to try to clear a speck that probably lived in her brain.
"New York tags," she repeated.
Sister Connolly asked,
"What makes Chanel important to you? What makes Lil D different than Stone?"
Salt looked over across the street at the red windows. In death, Chanel appeared to have been praying. Chanel's place. No flowers, not even weeds. Dirt's hard-packed, walked on, walked over. Even the dirt's dirty. The only door to that apartment has been broken since before I can remember. But she painted those windows red to fix it. Lil D tries to hide that mark on his neck with a towel. Those close-up little things make them different to me. Stone was raised in chaos. Maybe he had a curse on him, like you say, but he also got lost and twisted. I never knew anybody in the Holmes that cared for him, except maybe Man, and he just uses him and his twistedness. I'm afraid that Stone is beyond saving. I know the Bible says different, but he's beyond my power to help. Lil D, Big D, and Chanel have kept being put in my path, in my streets. Sister opened the door, and they walked down the steps together. Sister looked out and began to recite,
"Even so, it is not the will of your Father which is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish." Matthew 18:14.
The radio mic on Salt's shoulder barked, 3306, radio check.
Matthew 8:12.
Sister began another Bible quote.
"But the children of the kingdom shall be cast out into outer darkness."
Salt answered, 3306, loud and clear. The night had been so slow, radio was checking on the units. 3307, called radio. Pepper's number. No answer. 3307, radio check. No answer. Then,
3307, he answered.
Salt was lowering herself into the driver's seat, and for a moment experienced doubt about the reality of the conversation she just had with the woman on the porch, moths swirling around her head. Did she make up that quote about children being cast out into darkness?
3307, Pepper mumbled again.
He sounded groggy, like he'd been asleep. Not good. He'd been working off-duty jobs to send the boys to summer camp. She needed to get coffee for the two of them. After he'd had a hot sip or two, she thought about asking him to listen out for word in the street of guns and the Holmes. Chapter 20. Victims. From the road, the house, under a clouded moon, looked reassuringly the same. Yellow lamplight on in the front window, brighter back porch light outlining the corner of the house. She parked, cut the engine, and sat there listening to the small clicks and pops of the motor cooling. The oak and pecan trees were old, the lowest branches high, their limbs swept up toward the night, trunks solid. The sheep, their distant baas echoing, were far out beyond the light from the house, in the quiet, dark orchard. She tucked the 9mm into her waistband, then popped the trunk of the Honda and got all her gear, belt, vest, and uniform shirt. At first, there seemed to be moonlight spilled into the kitchen, but then she saw one glass panel from the back door shattered on the floor, reflecting the porch light. The door was ajar.
Wonder?
She dropped the load in her arms, grabbed the flashlight, and pulled the 9mm. "Just because it's your own house, don't panic," she told herself. "Always call for backup to search a house."
"Wonder?"
Salt tamped down a tide of fury, stepping carefully over the broken glass, bent down and touched a finger to one of the drops of viscous blood that smattered the shards and pieces. Wonders or the perps? Had Wonder managed to get a bit of flesh? She blinked. Her dog would have presented himself here, lips raised, showing his teeth, barking. Horribly, she imagined his body jerking, saliva flying. She imagined him, but heard only silence and the ticking of the mantel clock in the living room. The kitchen almost looked unfamiliar. She swept the flashlight with her left hand.
She held the 9 in her right hand, down close to her leg. I live here. In the flare of the flashlight, details in the ceiling medallion stood out in black and white. Not many places of concealment in the kitchen. She left the room dark behind her as she moved through to the rest of the house. A board groaned under her foot as she stepped into the hall, straining to listen. Something, someone inside, or voices coming from a distance, an idling engine.
Wonder?
There was no blood, no drag marks beyond what she had seen in the kitchen. He'd never allow himself to be picked up if he was conscious.
Wonder!
Her back against the plaster wall outside the bedroom, flashlight held high, she squatted low to quick peek around the door opening. Simultaneous with a scramble into the room, she brought the 9 to waist level and scanned the room with the light. The closed closet door was as she had left it. The drawers of the dresser appeared undisturbed. Then the mirror burst in reflection of the light beam as she stood. She grabbed the closet doorknob with a jerk. Empty. Out to the hall, dining room, library, living room, upstairs, tactically clearing each space.
Wonder!
Everything was as she had left it.
Wonder!
She breathed his name. The weeks, the day, the night, the hours, the minutes, now seconds, began to register with shaking exhaustion. There was no blood anywhere else in the house except for the kitchen. She retraced her steps and found drops that she'd missed coming up, on the steps to the porch. She looked out to the orchard and listened. The sheep sounded like their usual selves as they made their way from the back property, herded, by wonder. His animal eyes caught a bit of light, glowing red and gold, out of the darkness. She flew the beam of the light all around and over the back lot as she ran toward her dog.
Wonder!
He lifted his head, panting, and pulled his lips back over his teeth at her approach. She swallowed a cry that was building in her chest.
That'll do, Wonder!
He was torn from his ear to his lip, across the right side of his face. Blood caked and oozed, black, red, and pink flesh. The lid of his right eye was split, his black muzzle spackled with dripping and drying blood. Still, he stood facing the sheep that were now huddled against the outside of their pen. She flashed the light toward the side of the house, but impatient to touch her dog, she lowered the light and knelt.
Hey, baby, hey, baby.
He collapsed to the ground.
Good boy, good boy.
She touched him lightly, carefully inspecting the damage. Her fingers touched grit and stickiness. She picked up the flashlight and again slung the beam toward the road and across the orchard. She'd yet to check around the sides of the house. Staying low to the ground, she dashed to the back of the house and around to check the south, east, north faces of the house and all the shrubs and bushes. The sound of a car starting came from the distance, but she couldn't see headlights or taillights. She opened the pen, and the sheep, somehow sensing a different threat, scurried to their shelter. She went back to her dog.
Good boy.
There was blood oozing through scraped places all over his body. He whimpered and began panting hard. An ache to wail rose up in her throat, already raw from breathing hard. Wonder's eyes showed white at the edges. She knelt and turned the flashlight over the dog. He began to thrash, trying to gain purchase in the dirt, each sound from him like salt to her own wounds. A rush of fury filled her head. She was losing the order of things that kept bad situations under control, pushing herself to where she could make mistakes. She soothed her dog with her left hand and with her right drew her gun, pointed it out into the night, focusing through the tiny, luminous sights at nothing. Stunned, frustrated, and helpless to ease the dog's pain, she blinked and pleaded, "That'll do, Wonder, that'll do," repeating the command. He obeyed her and lay still.
"That'll do."
"I've gone too far," Salt choked. "It's my fault.
I should have known when they followed me in the truck.
Angry for wonder and for what might be waiting. Nothing moved, no one in sight, everything silent.
You've stepped into my space.
She slid her hands over Wonder's head, snout, legs. She shone the flashlight in his eyes. They rolled back, and his tongue drooped from the corner of his mouth. His head hung limp over her arm as she picked him up and carried him to the back porch, where she laid him on an old quilt. Inside, trying not to think about how he'd received the injuries, she grabbed cotton balls and hydrogen peroxide from the medicine cabinet. When she returned to the porch, Wonder lifted his nose and tried to stand, but his wobbly legs failed. He stumbled and yelped. The dog looked up at her with fuzzy confusion, sniffing the air, smelling the sheep. Wanting to go back to his little flock, he tried to get up again.
"No," she said softly,
and he stayed, like a good dog, his damaged side up. The wounds were no longer bleeding, but were raw and dirty. She sat between his front and back legs and began to sing while carefully lifting his matted fur.
"Little Bo Peep has lost her sheep and can't tell where to find them."
Night insects smashed into the porch screen. She sang to calm him. He moaned in the silence between verses. She sang until her vision blurred. Home wasn't safe. Wonder's normally sweet, earthy dog odor was diluted with something like the stink of sour clothes.
"Leave them alone, and they'll come home." "Stone?"
Over clenched teeth, she hissed the S out loud. "Cursed," Sister Connolly had said. Maybe it was time for her to leave the homes. Lil D, Janelle. Every crack path mapped in her mind. The victims, the perps, the gang. It just got worse, more violent, more drugs. Was the homes her curse? She tightened her fist. No, not until she got at least one little salvation. And dreamt she heard them bleeding. Even her teeth hurt. Her voice was going hoarse. She sang softer, then went to a low hum. But when she awoke, for they were still all fleeting, she squeezed peroxide into his side. Wonder raised his head at the sting. "Stay," she said. Her eyes began to lose focus, determined for to find them. The thought of Stone hurting her dog made her throat tighten. She found them indeed, but it made her heart bleed. Wonder lifted his head again and briefly pulled his lips back, showing his teeth, telling her she was hurting him. The peroxide bubbled. She imagined Stone hitting him, cutting him. Wonder looked at her with narrowed eyes. She finished his leg and lifted her hand to his head. He jerked his snout back and snapped. Salt stopped with a sharp intake of breath and slowly pulled back her hand. But in a faint voice, she continued with the last verse. And tried what she could. As a shepherdess should. By morning, Wonder seemed mostly back to his usual dogginess, staring at her until his breakfast bowl was filled, barking to work the sheep, and quarreling with her when she pointed him to the car for the trip to the vet. Dr. Withers assured her that Wonder had sustained no life-threatening injuries, and after the doctor gave him some stitches and preventative inoculations, she gathered her dog and drove directly to Mr. Gooden's. The old man was in his neat garden when she arrived. He waved as soon as he saw her car in his drive and propped the hoe he was carrying on a small, rusting tractor.
"Let that dog out," he said as she parked. "He can't hurt anything. The cows are way in the back."
Salt got out while Wonder stood in the back seat with his nose pressed to the window, eyes darting. "Sorry to come by without calling first," Salt said.
"Nonsense.
We're neighbors.
She took a quick, deep breath, getting ready to ask for his help, but he was squinting at her, looking with his keen, old eyes.
How have you been? How's your head? Your hair looks good short. You can hardly see any scar. Just looks like a part.
Salt knew that with his old-fashioned manners, her hair could look like, well, like wondrous fur, and he'd still find something nice to say.
I'm fine, thank you. But I could use your help with Wonder.
What's he been up to? Getting on top of the house again?
He laughed. Wonder liked high places, and one day she had come home and found that he had slipped out of the upstairs window onto the back porch roof and had made his way to a perch beside a chimney on the very highest point atop the house. Mr. Gooden had been in on the rescue, proud that at his age he could climb a ladder to the gable. He'd find other things to help her with, and then would go on for days about how the next time she needed her dog off the roof, or the sheep doctored, or the weeds mowed, she should call sooner.
No, I'm keeping those upstairs windows closed now, but...
Salt hesitated and looked toward her house. Mr. Gooden stood patient, still smiling.
I don't know how to ask you without just coming right out with it. I need to ask you to keep Wonder at your house for a couple of weeks. I'm not sure while I'm at work.
Of course, Sarah.
She opened the car door. Wonder jumped out, and she told the dog, Stand.
My lord,
Mr. Gooden said. Wonder's fur was all matted around the wounds. The old man slowly came over to the black dog, bent over, and scratched his good ear while he examined his damaged head. When he looked up at Salt, there was a purple tinge beneath his sun-weathered face.
How did this happen?
I'm afraid I've brought my job home. Someone came to the house last night while I was gone.
Son of a...
I was hoping that he could stay here, only while I'm at work, until I take care of the problem.
You put your mind at ease. Who wouldn't love this dog? And I enjoy his visits, even if he does rile the cow sometime. He's company. We'll take an evening walk. It will give me good reason to check your house before I go to bed, and I'll leave him on my screen porch so you can walk over to get him when you get home.
That's very generous, but no need to check the house. I don't want a chance putting you in harm's way. When I come by to pick him up, we'll be quiet.
Goodness, Sarah.
He hardened the lines in his face to a fierce frown.
I get to feel like Dirty Harry. I got my 357. I'll have a good time. I can look forward to maybe getting to shoot a bad guy.
Mr. Gooden gave her a Clint Eastwood ready-to-tangle grin.
I don't think they'll be back, but if you insist... Do you have a mobile phone so you can call the sheriff at the first sign of anything wrong?
She would not insult him because of his age. Besides, he was fit and no fool.
Sarah, he asked, stepping closer to her, have you reported this? Told anyone? And yes, I have my pocket phone.
They would reassign me, and I wouldn't be able to do what I need to do. I know this situation better than maybe I should, but I think I've been given this for a reason.
She put her hand on his shoulder, his muscles somehow both hard and soft. She dropped to one knee beside Wonder, lifted each of his ears, planted a little kiss on the soft inside pink tips, and swiped a drop of one tear that escaped from her right eye. Mr. Gooden held on to Wonder's collar while she got in the car.
Sarah.
Thank you, neighbor.
She gave Wonder the hand signal to stay and drove back to her house, alternately fantasizing about laying her head on Mr. Gooden's shoulder, and Mr. Gooden and his 357 facing down stone. Chapter 21. Wills. The terrain of the city seemed to slump under the weight of the huge building that housed its police headquarters. There was no view that provided an accurate perspective on the size of the massive structure. Once the warehouse for a catalog and retail company, it had later been a hub for rail transport all over the southeast. The building belonged to the 1930s and 40s. 21st century technology didn't function properly between the nicotine-stained walls. Computers glitched. High-tech communication wizardry failed. The behemoth wanted swing music and a cigarette. The ghosts of girl clerks in ankle-strap heels and managers with pencil-thin mustaches walked the floors while night workers sorted police reports, stored evidence, answered the 911 calls, and dispatched cops to crime scenes. Salt parked near the patrol car graveyard, where mutilated vehicles sat on wheelless rims, engines and doors missing from some, wrecks waiting to be cannibalized by motor pool mechanics, slumping on tires, rotting in oily puddles of water. She hummed the first notes to As Time Goes By as she entered the code on the electronically controlled, restricted door. She accessed a short hall, stacked with discarded monitors and keyboards, that led to a large, elaborate freight elevator, another relic from the 30s. The more modern elevators at the building's main entrance were unpredictable, and when they failed, employees had to walk up 7 or more flights of stairs. Salt ran her hand over the tarnished brass filigree of the cage as the outer doors rolled shut and the floors scrolled past the smoky window of the slow-moving lift. Conjuring Humphrey Bogart in trench coat and fedora, she got out on an empty floor with columns that took the eye up to a ceiling 20 feet high. The elevator door clanged, and the echo spread in the cavernous space. Yellow lines on the floor specified the layout for the ghosts of old shipping pallets. She wound her way through to the stairwell, where the floors were designated inexplicably with conflicting numbers. She walked up one flight to the 4th floor, marked as both the 4th in red and the 5th in black. At the double doors to the homicide unit, a receptionist with long fuchsia nails buzzed her in the outer door and gave her the code for the inner door. The whole look of the office betrayed the work that went on there. There was something incongruous about wills, spokesman for the dead, sacred work, bogey's heir, working from an open 1980s-era shoulder-high cubicle, his space delineated by cheap, flimsy materials. She found Wills at his cubicle, surrounded by brown paper evidence bags, guns with red tags, and murder books. She'd never seen him without the fedora, never seen his hair, which was light brown, thinning, and looked accidentally cut. Across the aisle, Gardner was asleep with a violet file covering his face. Both their cubicles were stacked with files of various colors, the colors denoting the years of the murders. They worked scenes as partners, but each investigation had only one lead detective, one to hold responsible. When he saw her, Wills smiled and put his finger to his lips, motioning for silence, pointed at the sleeping Gardner, and led her to the coffee room. His tie was loosened, and there were smudges of what was probably print powder on his left shirt sleeve. Gardner's been working 24 hours straight on that triple in the West End. What brings the legendary Salt to our humble office? His smile widened as he looked her in the eye. Are you just getting off shift? He pulled out an orange plastic chair for her. In the microwave window on the counter, Salt caught a glimpse of her after the shift, still growing back in hair. She looked down at her scuffed boots. Yeah, it wasn't too hectic tonight, so I thought I'd try and catch you before you got off. He had a happy, expectant look, his eyes wide, bright, smiling. Are you making any progress? She asked. He laughed, still smiling.
I don't know. Am I?
I was wondering if I could see the crime scene photos from Marcy Street, and I wondered if you could get the ATF trace on Mitchell's guns, the perp I shot. She said. His smile wilted.
He shrugged and turned to get coffee from a stained pot on the counter. He turned back to her with a wrinkled brow and handed her the cup.
No wonder you're the legendary Salt. Do you bleed blue?
Did I catch you at a bad time? Salt sensed his mood change.
Oh, no.
He shrugged again and looked down into his coffee. 'Cause you can just call me at the precinct if this is a bad time for you. He interrupted her.
Salt, do you ever think or talk about anything but what goes on in the homes?
This is a bad time. I can see you are busy. She stood to leave. Wills put his hand out.
I'm sorry. I just get tired of talking and thinking murder all the time. When you walked in, my mind left death for a minute, and I was reminded of some trees.
Trees? She suddenly recalled her dream of making chairs in the woods. He shook his head.
There are some sweet gum trees in a place I go to in the mountains. You know those trees that drop those prickly balls? Why are they called sweet gum anyway? You just brought those trees to my mind.
Doing her best Scarlett O'Hara imitation, Salt said, Why, Rhett, you do say the sweetest things. Trees. She tilted her head, smiled coyly, and batted her lashes. Wills laughed.
Well, the old Salt has a funny bone.
My bones can be as funny as the next guy's, she said, still smiling. In fact, my dog finds me quite humorous. She was struck with a sense that this might be going in a direction other than what she'd intended. She worried that she was being disingenuous.
And how is the wonder dog?
You remember his name.
How about letting me meet that fine canine?
He raised an eyebrow. Her breath wouldn't sync with the words she was saying. She bit her lower lip, concentrating.
What does the pause mean? Does he bite?
Not unless I tell him to, she said. Wills leaned closer, but not too close.
I don't.
Slowly, Salt said, Okay, and noticed that his eyes were dog brown.
Okay, what? Can I meet your dog, or okay that I don't bite?
Okay, you are welcome to meet my dog, and okay, I don't think you bite.
Well, that's settled. When?
When what? Wills threw up his hands in playful exasperation.
Gah! When can I come meet your dog?
He laughed. They both turned as Gardner poked his murder file marked face in the break room door. He covered his eyes and abruptly turned back out, playing like he had caught them in an intimate moment.
My suave partner, Wills muttered,
and she saw her chance to get back to her mission. Can I see the photos? She asked, searching for safer ground.
What are you doing Saturday? Wills asked.
Saturday is okay, but can't I see them now?
Perfect. Saturday it is. But I meant to meet your dog. Yes, you can see the photos now. I'll also try to light a fire under the crime lab so ATF can do the trace.
He put his hand on the underside of her arm and steered her back to his cubicle. Salt wasn't sure what she had agreed to, but was relieved when he retrieved Chanel's murder file from the bottom of a violet pile. He handed her the large photo envelope and watched as she slid the photos out. They were color 8.5 by 11s, taken in sequence from the outside moving in. Chanel's rundown building, her apartment door with the hanging boards, the kitchen entrance, ratty living room, dark hall, sad bedroom, closet, and last, Chanel's bloody body. The photo began to blur in 3D. Her fingers seemed to go beneath the blood on Chanel's forehead, a smear between her brows, like the ashes of penance. Salt's hand lifted to her own head, finding the tender spot in her scalp.
I hadn't noticed the scar, she heard Wills say.
Her hand responded to gravity, and dropped to where the breastplate in the center of her bulletproof vest usually was. She shuffled the photos back to the living room and hall shots. "I thought I remembered flowers on the floor," she said, both to herself and Wills, and pointed to the floor in the kitchen shot.
"Flowers?" "Yep, those look like flowers," he confirmed.
"Do you know what kind?"
"What kind?"
"I think they're wisteria," she said, mostly to herself. She thought she could make out the little lavender blossoms, some still clinging to small cuts of vine, scattered on the floor. Rolled against the hall wall was a jar that might have held them, although it was hard to discern recent clutter from what appeared to be the normal chaos. "Flowers." She pressed her hand to her chest again, unconsciously, feeling the rise of her breath.
"Salt?"
She took one last look at Chanel and put the photos in the envelope. As she handed the pictures back, Wills was telling her,
"The gun traces. I'll have them by Saturday when I come to your place."
"I'll be working on the sheep. I guess I could use some help, so you'd be best to wear something you won't mind ruining," she said, making up her mind.
"Sheep?"
"Take I-85 south to the Treehaven exit, turn right, and go about 5 miles. My place is an old house with Alt on the mailbox on the right. I'll be in back by 8 a.m.
"Can I bring my dogs?"
"Maybe I'll meet them some other time. Saturday is sheep business, and Wonder won't have time to socialize."
"Will you?"
"Let's see how it goes." She was walking backward toward the homicide entrance.
"You're a bit of a mystery yourself, Salt."
Wills followed her, talking. "I thought you were getting tired of mysteries."
"Only the ones I can't solve," he laughed, "and when the stack on my desk falls over. I'll see you Saturday."
He walked her out to the stairwell, marked 4 and 5, held the door for her, and as she started down, leaned over the stair rail above.
"Saturday, 8 a.m.
His voice echoed down. Salt looked up. "Saturday," she said, and headed down to the 3/4 floor, and Humphrey Bogart waiting in the shadows. Chapter 22. Mary Marie McLeod. There was a small chain across the narrow opening of the door, a chain that looked old and corroded, the plating coming off. Through the 2-inch opening, Mary Marie McLeod, Chanel's daughter, blinked one eye. The light behind her showed briefly as she changed to the other eye. "I'm Officer Salt. I was at your mother's apartment the day you found her." "Mother's Day," said the girl through the opening. "I'd like to talk to you. Can I come in?" Salt said gently. The chain tightened, then drooped. "My grandmother says not to let anybody, not anybody in this house. She don't want dirt tracked in. That's what she says." Mary changed eyes again. "I'm sure she didn't mean not to let the police in. What if there was an emergency?" "Is this an emergency?" Her eye looked bright. "It's kind of an emergency," Salt told the girl behind the door. "You can at least take the chain off. I'd like to see how you're doing. All I can see like this is one eye at a time." Mary closed the door with a bump. The chain slid out of the keeper, a rusty scraping sound, then a small clack when it fell against the jamb. Then nothing. Silence.
"Mary?"
The door slowly opened. Mary stood facing her, in a plaid school uniform jumper, white blouse, and white socks. She wasn't wearing shoes. The hall floor behind her was one long gleam, and there was an odor of pine cleaner.
"You can't wear your shoes in this house," the girl said, turning to walk toward the back of the house, pretending to skate on the shiny floor.
"I'm a cop. These are high-top lace-up work shoes. It will take time to get them off, and longer to get them back on right. I might get an emergency call."
Mary moved her feet to slip back down the hall, slipping for a slide. Awkward, though,
like she had to practice being a kid.
You said this was kind of an emergency. Anyway, my grandmother doesn't care who you are. Nobody wears shoes in this house. And I don't care if you are the police, because I'm not getting a whipping and having to polish these floors again because you lied about this is an emergency.
She was disappearing into the back of the house. Salt sat down on the floor just inside the door and began unlacing her boots. The floors were just as spotless at this level, not a speck of dust. She shaded her eyes from the light reflected from the shining boards and experienced a fragment of memory. Her father, lying on the floor, his blood seeping into the flowers on the wool rug, roses turning pink to red. Salt placed her lace-loosened boots beside the door, then pressed her hand to the immaculate floor, leaving the print of her palm fading as she pushed to stand. Remembering the last time she'd purposely left a palm print. She followed Mary, passing rooms with furniture covered in sheets so white they bordered on blue. The house seemed to echo silence. Salt paused at the doorway to the kitchen. Mary had sat down at the table, head bent over, spooning cereal and milk from a plastic container into her mouth. A shaft of sunlight from a window fell across the back of the girl's neck and head, highlighting the short, soft hairs that had escaped her braids.
"You took me away from my cereal. It's soggy now," Mary said.
The lid was lying neatly beside the container. There were no dishes or other kitchen paraphernalia visible. School books were stacked, squared with the edges of the table. There didn't seem to be any air circulating in the house. Salt was beginning to feel queasy. She could feel sweat beads break out on her lip and temples. "What time does your grandmother get home?"
"She works two jobs, cleaning a white lady's house in the day and at a store till 9.
"Summer school over yet? Regular school starts soon, doesn't it? Not much of a break?" Salt asked, looking at the neat books. She pressed the back of her hand to her forehead to stop the sweat from slipping down her face.
"What's the emergency? I'm not talking anymore till you tell me."
Mary's voice was louder than Salt's, or was stronger than Salt felt at this moment. "I'm trying to find out who killed your mother," Salt said, and watched as Mary put the spoon carefully, slowly, back in the plastic container. The weight of the handle tipped its balance, spilling some of the milk. A small puddle began to form on the white tablecloth. The girl pushed away and began to pull her fingers like she had done in Chanel's apartment the day she found her mother dead.
I'm in trouble,
she said, watching the damp spread on the cloth. "Milk will wash out," Salt said, alarmed at the girl's reaction to the soiled cloth. Mary's confident facade vanished.
"She'll know," Mary said. "Look, there it is,"
staring at the tablecloth. "Here," said Salt, picking up the books and putting them on the counter. She grabbed the end of the tablecloth, thinking of magicians who pulled cloths from under whole table settings. "Where's the washing machine? It'll be done in no time." The radio mic on her shoulder spit static, then began calling for units to respond to a burglary in progress. 3306, are you in service? Salt eased the volume knob lower and turned her head toward the mic. "Radio, do you have any other units available?" Mary watched with worried eyes. "Negative," replied Radio. "Damn," Salt said to herself. Mary shivered, like she was trying to fit back in her skin. "I have to get my shoes on. They're calling me. I'll come back." Salt headed toward the door in her shoes. "Do you have any idea who might have killed your mother? Did you see anything that might help me find out who killed her?"
"I'm not allowed to use the washing machine," said the girl, following Salt,
who kept looking back over her shoulder to check on her. Mary pulled at her fingers one at a time as she kept up with Salt, going down the hallway.
"I heard that word you said."
"What, killed?"
"Damn," You said damn. If you talk like that, you'll be damned in hell, my grandmother says. Then you lied and said there was an emergency in here.
The girl's face grew stern. You're not allowed to use the washing machine? Salt sat down on the floor in order to get into her shoes.
My grandmother wants to see what gets dirty.
Mary looked down at the floor, then cut her eyes to Salt. Hand wash the tablecloth now. It might dry before 9. I don't know how long this other emergency will take, but I'll be back if I can. Already she could feel the shoes were tied too loose. She tried to jerk the laces tight without untying and starting over. Radio, I'm en route to the call. ETA, 5 minutes. She ran down the steps. Just before she ducked into the patrol car, she saw the girl close the door and open it again with the chain between the door and the jam. Salt sped off with blue lights, no siren, to catch a burglar who she hoped might have loose shoes. It was late in the shift when she had gotten her calls caught up and could get back to the McLeods. She'd caught the burglar after all, but had not saved the baby in a burning car. The grandmother came to the door, quickly looked at Salt through the opening, and slid the chain off.
Good evening, officer. What can I do for you?
Mrs. McLeod, with a slight smile, stood perfectly in the middle of the door frame.
I didn't call the police. It's late.
She filled the entrance, square and solid in a big black dress with a purple sheen. Salt looked for some similarities between Mrs. McLeod and Sister Connolly, who'd said they were cousins. But where Sister was tall and thin, with movements either too quick to catch or so slow you didn't notice them, Mrs. McLeod seemed a barrier, broad and thick. Sister had a deep plum shimmery color. Mary's grandmother was light brown, blonde hair pulled back in a twist, and green eyes.
May I come in? Salt asked.
Oh, my heavens, I just got off work and this place is a mess, said the grandmother, smoothing the tight sides of her hair.
No, it's... Salt halted. I just wanted to check to see how Mary is taking her mother's death. I was concerned.
You don't have to worry yourself, said Mrs. McLeod. Chanel wasn't much of a mother anyhow. I mostly raised the girl, though it's hard with all the trouble these streets bring. I keep Mary off the street, though. I keep her busy. She takes extra classes during the summer.
Does she make good grades?
Oh, yes. I see that she does. Why, she's gonna go to Bible college someday.
The woman hadn't moved from the doorway. Salt shifted on her feet to unobtrusively try to see around the large woman. Mrs. McLeod, I'm also trying to find out who killed your daughter. Do you know anything that would help me? Anything that would help me understand why or who might have wanted her dead? Mrs. McLeod thrust her face out directly at Salt, chin first.
The devil and drugs killed her. She killed herself.
She kept her hands open and together, like she was holding a hymnal or Bible.
I did what I could to keep her straight and on God's path, but she was just like Mary Marie, didn't want to do right. Now the devil got her full time. Mary Marie knows that. She's seen the way her mother died.
Salt interrupted the woman's tirade. Did Chanel help you? Give you money for Mary?
Now where would a crack whore get money?
She swiveled her head toward the inside of the house. Every hair was held by her tight bun.
Who said she gave me money?
When is the last time you saw Lil Dee?
Salt asked quickly to the back of Mrs. McLeod's head, some instinct to draw her attention from the inside of the house.
I don't know, Lil Dee.
She snapped her head back toward Salt.
You seem to know so much about my business, my family, then you should know Daryl Jr. was claimed by his daddy, not me. Daryl Mobley never claimed Mary 'cause my Chanel was whoring by then. Mary doesn't even know who her father might be.
Salt took one step back with her right foot, but leaned forward on her left, close enough to Mrs. McLeod to notice a dry sweat smell. She went quiet and checked the fierce resentment she'd begun to feel toward the old woman, then dropped the questioning that felt dangerous to Mary. The car with loud music thumped by, rapping the words, kill, thump, thump, kill, thump, thump, bouncing out into the night air. She faced the grandmother again, but Mrs. McLeod was watching the car at the traffic light. With only half her attention, Mrs. McLeod said,
You, Salt, don't come back to my house lest you got some business here. Lest you got some business and you won't. Don't come back.
The big woman backed inside across the entrance and closed the door. Salt stood there listening, but there was no sound of the chain sliding back in place. Mrs. McLeod was also waiting, close, on the other side of the door. Salt did a reluctant, slow turn to go down the steps, feeling worry for the lonely, sad girl on the other side of that silent door. Chapter 23 Flowers That Grow in Ditches. The hardest part of treating the sheep for foot rot was getting the dusty, smelly animals to stand in the tub. But Wells was gamely holding the biggest of the five sheep steady in the trough of water and zinc sulfate, while Salt clipped the hooves of the dam in the iron cradle. The sheep he was holding kept trying to step out of the trough, splashing the solution on the detective's jeans. That morning, Wells had pulled up to her house at 8 o'clock on the minute. The day was already bright, morning sun promising heat. She'd heard the truck as soon as he turned off the highway onto the gravel drive. By the time she met him at the side of the house, he was already out and reaching back into the cab. The truck shone, looking freshly washed and waxed. His jeans looked new and had a sharp crease down the exact middle of each leg. He turned, pulling a bouquet of orange tiger lilies, trailing green ribbons from the passenger seat. Salt was already muddy from mixing the foot bath in the dust of the backyard. Wills's jeans and the flowers made her anxious. Her fingers curled around the grip of the hoof trimmers in her hand.
My God, what are those for? Wills asked, looking at the sharp, narrow-bladed clippers.
Sheep feet, she answered, looking at the lilies. Wills held out the orange flowers.
These used to grow on the side of the road when I was a kid. Now they sell them in florist shops.
Salt put the clippers in her back pocket and received the lilies in her arms. Some still grow in a ditch in back of my property. I never thought to bring them inside. They're really pretty. She was drawn by the soft throats of the striped blooms.
Pistil. Stamens, she said softly as her fingers examined them.
Sounds like the evidence list in a murder book. He laughed. Your house. Look at that second story. Dormers and gables.
His gaze swept upward. Come in. Let me put these in water. Careful of the flowers, she could only dust one side of herself as they walked toward the porch. Wells followed, then stopped when he saw wonder in his obsessed, stretched snout stare, holding the sheep in a tight group in their night pen. The dog's ears quivered, but he never looked away from the sheep.
How long until I can introduce myself? Wills asked. He doesn't even seem to know I'm here.
He knows more than you think, but he lives to work the sheep. Today he'll get to help us single them out.
Us?
Wills raised his eyebrows. We're clipping the sheep's hooves and giving them foot baths today.
We?
In return for the ATF information, I can trade you how to take care of sheep hooves. She smiled and started up the steps. Wills followed.
Dogs, sheep, who knew?
In the doorway of the old kitchen, he stood looking around, scanning the ceiling, the tile floor, the old table. He met her eyes as she stood at the sink. She was adjusting to the idea of him being in her house. She'd not imagined him here. She looked up at the blue enamel pitcher that sat on the high shelf.
Want me to get it down? This is an amazing place. Did you do all the restoration?
He asked. She pulled over a footstool for him to stand on in order to reach the pitcher. No restoration. Over 10 or so years I've upgraded the plumbing and electric. I finally tore down the old outhouse when I built the sheep pen. The place has belonged to my family since it was built after the Civil War, and before that there was an original homestead. She filled the pitcher from the deep sink and put the flowers in it. The powder of the pollen felt like new skin when she touched the soft surfaces of the lilies, and it left her fingertips stained yellow. Wills walked to the hallway. Wiping the pollen on her jeans, Salt came up behind him, carrying the pitcher and flowers. "Would you like to see the rest of the downstairs?" He turned to let her pass.
"Very much."
For a moment, they faced each other over the orange flowers. She lowered her eyes and turned down the hall.
"This your living room?"
he asked at the arched doorway. Again, not having planned on Will's being in the house, she had left her nightshirt and the old afghan on the sofa, a clear indication to a smart detective where she had slept. She put the lilies on the table beside the sofa, picked up her nightshirt, then didn't know what to do with it, and threw it back on the sofa. "Yes, living room," she said, ready to be back outside with the dog and sheep. Wills turned to the stairs that led to the second floor. Just as he put his hand on the banister, she herded him in the opposite direction. "I keep the upper floors closed off. Too expensive to cool and heat." She quickly crossed over the hall to the library doors and spread them with a slam. "And this is the library." Will started to go in, but Salt was already heading back down the hall. "The dining room, which I don't use, is here." She pointed to the middle room on her left. Will's lagged. "That's the real bedroom." She pointed to the room on the right, not stopping until she was back in the kitchen. She was already at the door to the porch, looking out at the sheep, when Wills caught up with her.
"That was fast," he said. "Remember, I don't bite."
He seemed so confident and steady. She felt edgy. "I need to get to work." She pushed the screen open. Wills followed.
"I'm at your service, sweetheart," he said with a bogey accent.
She brushed hair from her eyes and jogged down the steps. Salt opened the gate, and the sheep almost jumped over one another to get away from the stare of the dog, who hadn't moved. Wills hooked one boot over a bottom rail.
"This is beautiful and amazing. What a puzzling policewoman. You keep sheep because..."
"To train the dog and fertilize the orchard. Equipment is minimal. The clamping cradle to hold the sheep for clipping their hooves. The tubs for the foot baths." She shrugged and called Wonder into the pen, putting him in a stay, and then pulled the cradle to the gate. She signaled Wonder to maneuver one of the sheep against the cradle, made of two small iron grates. She clamped the cradle shut, then rotated the lever so that the dam was on her side.
"Poor sheep," said Wills. "I don't even like that ride at the fair."
She pulled the clippers from her back pocket and started on a hoof. Wills watched closely while she clipped the rough edges.
"That takes a lot of hand strength," he said.
"Same muscles you use to pull a trigger." The sheep tried to jerk her leg from Salt's grip. Her hand slipped, and the clippers dug into the soft part of the sheep's hoof. It let out a bleat.
"It's bleeding," Wills said.
The dam struggled in the cradle, its hooves clanking against the metal clamp. "Clipping almost always draws a little blood. I hate hurting them, but it comes with the job."
"Speaking of the job, why do their hooves have to be trimmed? I've never heard of it. Of course, what I know about sheep comes from movies."
"The ragged, overgrown parts make places for bacteria and infections. When the hooves are cut back, the medication can get in there, and the exposure to air helps keep bacteria from growing." The dam had gone quiet and was panting. Salt lowered the cradle and opened the clamp to let it walk into the adjoining footbath pen. "Just steady her for a few minutes. She showed him how to hold the sheep. He grabbed the sheep's wool through the iron bars. It let out a sharp bleat like a burp, and immediately kicked a